when we ship a pallet of our flat unfilled boxes to our filling station, we're shipping a truck full of boxes that are all just stacked up like newspapers are stacked up. Whereas, you know, a bottle company would be shipping empty bottles of water. So one truckload of our flat boxes would fill, if we expanded them, would fill 26 truckloads of boxes standing up on their end. So right there, you've got a 26-to-1 ratio of something that can be collapsed versus something that can't be collapsed.
It's Package Design Unboxed, a show about packaging, design, and everything in between. I'm Evelio Matos, and on today's show, Rob Keenan talks about how boxed water is better. The water known for its milk carton-like packaging is owning sustainability, from FSC and collapsible cartons to replanting our national forests, one Instagram post at a time.
All right, thanks for joining me. I've got Rob Keenan, Chief Marketing Officer at Boxed Water is Better. Rob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Great to see you.
That's awesome. You too. And you're in, where are you? You're in Michigan?
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Nice.
You always show the hand. It's over here. We're actually closer to Chicago than we are to Detroit, oddly enough.
Michigan's not known for its water. So.
Oh, no, no, no. Lake Michigan is one of the purest water sources and one of the largest lakes in the world.
Is it? Look at that.
Yeah.
Look, I'm learning something the first couple of seconds here.
Lake Michigan, we call it our freshwater ocean. It's beautiful.
That's amazing.
Lord knows there's been some problems in a few of our cities, which we've actually been trying to help out with. But at the same time, Lake Michigan, gorgeous. Come here sometime.
So, Rob, I kind of want to just, you know, it's boxed water. I think from packaging, as packaging designers, we've seen boxed water. You know, when it came out a while ago, I mean, there was articles everywhere about this water, and you know, packaging designers like just fell in love with this, the idea of boxed water and the look, and you know, the nostalgia of the milk carton, right? You know, going back to like third grade, going down the cafeteria line, you get like the milk and it's frozen. It's like, oh my god, I got ice cream. It's like that whole feeling. But now we're, you know, a few years down the line in the brand, and can you maybe just recap the story behind the brand?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's actually cool to have this conversation because our package design and actually just honoring the aesthetic has been one of the key tenets of our brand. So we were created, actually the individual, his name is Ben Gott, was one of our founders. And then Darren Kuipers was a partner of his. He's still our CEO. Ben is a designer at heart. And the birth of the concept was all about sustainability. So they were going to Lollapalooza and they were going to events and they saw plastic piling up everywhere. And what's fascinating from a human-centered design is they said there's got to be a better way than using these plastic bottles. But what was even more interesting, I think, is that we've all grown up with plastic around us and we've become plastic blind. We're blind to the fact that it's all around us. So that was one of the inspirations to the box. Was, yes, thinking about a better way, and the milk carton was the first thing that came to mind. But aesthetically, what I think is fascinating is they went to a grocery store, and everything you see in a grocery store is blue when you go to the water aisle.
Right.
It's blue, and it's light blue, and it's beautiful. And so consciously keep this as simple and white and stark and almost anti-marketing as possible so that when you put it on the shelf, it will stand up. It'll be a disruptor even visually. So he consciously worked through making sure that the package itself from a design perspective would fit on a shelf. This is not your traditional milk carton size, the bottom. It fits on a shelf, make sure it fits in a cup holder. And then from a design and aesthetic point of view, keep it as minimalistic as possible. And that's why all the way around, there's a lot of white space in order for it to stand out. The other thing that if you fast forward to now, so we've been completely embraced by the fashion industry and designers and cultural creatives. As we grew in a lot of the coffee houses where the designers would be mingling. When you stack ours up and you go to a runway show at Rag & Bone, for example, mm-hmm. It's beautiful the way the product stands out and the way it is something that is elegant and subtle. And a lot of the fashion, besides wanting to have a sustainable alternative, are choosing us because we are also an elevated sustainable alternative.
That's awesome.
And then the final thing, and again, I'm sorry if I'm rambling.
No.
But the other thing that's cool that's also come from the design itself, we're in a lot of yoga studios, a lot of fitness studios, and a couple of the fitness studios have talked to me about the fact that the product is designed, it has that nostalgia, it stands out. It actually prompts the conversation and it breaks the hypnotism of what plastic is. I've had so many people, especially fitness people, come to me and say, you know, I'm doing a class and I can't tell you how you used to reach for your bottle unconsciously and drink. But the fact that this stands out so much causes a conversation about sustainability. And it breaks that into a conversation about, oh, yeah, I didn't even know I was drinking out of plastic. I should do something to help the planet. So it's to me, it's incredibly powerful what you can do with a package design is as simple as this.
You know, I definitely want to dig into that pack and kind of talk about it and the materials behind it.
Yeah.
You know, Rob, you've been with Boxwater now for four years.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And before that, you were at UGG, you were at Timberland, Land O'Lakes. You've got, you know, quite a roster and has always
rollerblade.
Yes.
It's making a comeback, by the way.
Yeah, everybody's trying to get out of the house at the moment. Through those brands, like what have you learned? You know, what did you learn on the marketing side? What did you learn professionally that you're applying today that you're still using today?
Yeah, no, there's a couple of things. Well, I'll talk marketing, but then I'll also just talk, I guess, life. Number one, most important thing is you're only as good as your reputation as a person and as a brand. And so you cannot break trust. On a personal side, you want to have I've been doing this for 30 plus years. You want to be able to call people and have them smile when they pick up the phone and go, yeah, I'll talk to Rob. There's a lot of people, if you break trust, if you don't live up to your word, if you don't come through, you want to be that go-to person.
Sure.
And then that translates into you want to be go-to brand. Back in the day, I didn't do this, but a lot of brands around us, Timberland was the best example of a brand that was incredibly authentic, incredibly lived up to its values, and made sure that they were, their whole saying was doing well while doing good. You know, you mix profit with purpose. Back in the day, there were plenty of brands, and there's still plenty of brands that think they can just spend millions of dollars on beautiful models and beautiful ad campaigns to create a brand image for you to buy into. But now with the internet and with the savvy consumers we have, you need to stand for more than just the quality of your product or the luster of your brand or how you can shine it up. So what I think the biggest thing you can learn is that brands and companies are collections of people, and a brand should stand for what those people stand for. And ideally, then that is what would draw the consumer in to buy into you. I mean, it's obvious with us that we're more than just water. We're also sustainability. At Timberland, there was the doing well while doing good. They did an incredible amount of social justice work across the country, and also became extreme advocates in sustainability. So I guess what I've learned in all my years is you should work for a company you believe in, but then now more than ever, you should tell the world what your company believes in. Because frankly, if you don't, they're going to find out, and you better be believing in things that are good and supporting the good that's around you.
No, that's great. That's definitely true, especially today.
Yeah, especially today. I mean, I love the fact that today, when I was, you know, in my 20s and 30s, I never thought of the depth of the cultural things or the environmental things that the younger generation thinks about. I mean, that's cool. That gives you hope. That gives me hope for the future, because you've got a whole group of people from age 20 to 40 who are so much more enlightened. And then you couple that with the internet, they have so much more access to information that I see nothing but the world going in a good place. Now you as a brand need to make sure that you're addressing and making sure you're part of that world and not just being left behind because you're chasing shiny things or trying to build something that's not meaningful or value.
Yeah, I appreciate kind of taking that turn into your personal history, because I think it's just so important today to learn about people and what they've done and kind of what they've, those experiences.
And sorry, and the other thing that just, I'm thinking about rollerblade. It's just, The other thing I would give any recommendation to anybody who's no matter what role they are, at Rollerblade, it was funny, they called me the garbage man because they gave me all the projects that nobody wanted. So we had all these excess laces from all the skates that we were making. We had ball bearings, we had this, that, the other. We had warehouses full of stuff is one example. Nobody wanted to talk about the protective gear because it wasn't sexy. Nobody wanted to talk, you know, it's all. And so they just kept giving me all these things. And so early on, the more you take on, the more you learn. And so like I learned all about inventory. I'm a marketing guy. I learned all about inventory management. I learned about how logistics worked. I learned about how MPS ordering system, you know, you learn everything you do. So as a younger person, I say, don't never turn down a project and just keep taking on all you can, even beyond the scope of your job, because you never know. The rest of my life, I've been stumping people on Flexo rotogravure printing processes because I know these.
Right.
And it's good. You walk into meetings and you're not an expert, but they always say, you know, you know enough to be dangerous, and so you know enough to be able to guide things in the right direction by getting exposure to lots of different things.
God, no, that's a great point. Never turning down opportunities because those are things you take with you for the rest of your life. So that's awesome. So let's focus on the box of box water, right? So I've spent some time with the packs and spent some time with the product. I think I picked some up at Cost Plus.
That would make sense. Yeah.
I think from a form factor, the fact that it's a square footprint, you know, when you're transporting this water, you're actually transporting a brick of water versus, you know, the cylinders with all the gaps in between where you're transporting a lot of air. What's the offset between just the square versus the cylinder? Like, what's the carbon footprint that you're able to reduce just because of the shape of this pack?
Well, let me answer that in a very circular way. And I'll explain why later. There's a number of areas that make it better. The square is one of them, but I'm going to start more with shipping the flat as opposed to shipping an empty bottle, which is another thing that nobody ever thinks about, because you're right. But even before then, when we ship a pallet of our flat unfilled boxes to our filling station, we're shipping a truck full of boxes that are all just stacked up like newspapers are stacked up. Whereas, you know, a bottle company would be shipping empty bottles of water. So one truckload of our flat boxes would fill, if we expanded them, would fill 26 truckloads of boxes standing up on their end. So right there, you've got a 26-to-1 ratio of something that can be collapsed versus something that can't be collapsed, which I think is remarkable in the first place. The second thing that I would say as far as the geometry is, you're spot on. I don't know specifically that number.
Sure.
I've heard, but I know in doing math with my kids, that literally we were doing this the other day, is that the difference I think was 18% as far as putting a circle in a square, the difference between the corners of that. So I think there's an 18% improvement between having square boxes that are all stacked tight versus the space between all the circles. So again, just thinking like in a micro sense, you think about the trucks. Now let's go into a macro sense. What if you're importing boatloads of this water from faraway islands, and I'll make it up, let's say Fiji islands or mountains. I mean, boatloads, millions of pounds of this product. That 18%, all of a sudden, you add a lot of zeros to that when you think about the fossil fuels that are being used to move that water around.
And you guys just became, you were the most sustainable packaged water brand.
Yeah.
Right, that was just announced on BevNet. What can you tell me about that? What does that entail?
So thank you, it's super exciting for us because one of the things that's driven us nuts for 10 years is this plastic cap.
Yeah.
And frankly, us and our consumers, we always have people saying, yeah, but your cap is still plastic. And this was a petroleum-based cap at one time, and we had looked into sugarcane plant-based cap, but we never felt like that was a good alternative for the planet, primarily because sugarcane is being grown for profit to make this, and it takes it uses a ton of natural resources, land, water, and so on, in order to grow sugarcane. We worked with Elopak is the manufacturer that makes this, and they also are very sustainability minded. For years, to think of a way, and they came up with it. It's a way to use the waste from trees, so trees that are grown sustainably in Scandinavia, for the paper industry. There's never been a tree that's been felled to make this cap. They're taking the waste of all that of the paper industry and creating extracting oil called tall oil out of it. And they're using that oil to make this cap. So we were 74% renewable, so 74% paper. Now we've added the cap as part of that, and now this is 92% made from renewable materials. And like I always say, you know, you can plant more trees, but you can't plant more oil. And nowadays, you can't plant more aluminum. I mean, both of those things are non-renewable resources that are extracting minerals from our planet and won't last forever.
You know, I've spoken to Tom Zaki of TerraCycle, and mm-hmm. I've had some other recyclers on as well, and some designers from the sustainability side of things. Totally. There's a lot of confusion for consumers on, you know, this type of pack, whether it's the boxed water or, you know,
juice boxes,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to recycle it, the idea is that it's either 100% recyclable and people throw it in their blue bin at the curbside, or that it's completely not recyclable because of the plastic and aluminum that's bonded in there. From your perspective, what's the recyclability of that pack at the moment?
It's probably the biggest hurdle that we have to overcome is that confusion, not the recyclability of it, but the confusion of it, because there's two sides to every coin, like everything. So this is 100% recyclable. Everything here, the layer, there's aluminum in it, very thin, thinner than a human hair, and it's all recyclable. The issue going on right now is the equipment that's needed in order to recycle it. I'm happy to say that 72% of Americans live in a community where they have curbside recycling for this box and for their juice boxes and for their, you know, the chicken stock that you buy, anything that is shelf stable. As you know, this is an aseptic package that's shelf stable. That 72% is up from like 55% less than 5 years ago. So what you need, and we work with a group called the Carton Council, which is a council of manufacturers of Tetra Pak and Elopak that make these aseptic packs. And they work with the municipalities and with the local governments on how to recycle it. Here in Grand Rapids, 2 years ago, the Carton Council worked with us and with our local municipality, and they bought the cost like $180,000 to $200,000 to buy a machine that basically pulps and pummels and then separates everything. So again, it depends on where you talk about it in the cycle. You know, in the ivory tower, this is recyclable 100%. Then you have to go to the municipality and say, do you have the machine? And luckily, 72% of Americans can say yes now, and we hope to get that to 99%. And then the third aspect is whether the recycler in that community is willing to take it and then move it on. And there's groups called MRFs that actually, are you familiar with?
Yes.
Okay, good. So like anything, whether it's a box, whether it's a can, or whether it's a plastic bottle, these MRFs don't necessarily recycle it themselves. They'll take it and then they'll resell it. And any one of these objects are worth a certain amount of money on the secondary market. The groups that have the capability to separate this, they get a higher price. And so they find it a nice economic model. Frankly, the plastic and the aluminum, with all the onslaught that's going on, it's become less profitable. Yeah. And so a lot of these conversations come down to profitability and less about I mean, we could put the actual recyclability aside and let's talk about the profitability. That's the conversation that we were having. I'm having these conversations with townships, and I've, like in LA, I've been talking to their a lot of recyclers there. We are recyclable in LA, and but one of the MRFs came back to us, and it turned out to be a financial conversation, not a physical conversation.
Sure.
Does that help?
No, that does. I think
extraordinarily convoluted.
No, I mean, I think, you know, that's one point that I try to make anytime we have a sustainability conversation, is the fact that the MRFs and the recyclers, it's a business. You know, they don't do it for charity. And if there's no money in it, you know, are things recyclable? You know, anything is recyclable. It's mm-hmm. just, can that business make money recycling it? And if they can't, then it goes to landfill. You know, and mm-hmm. a lot of times people will put recycling symbols on stuff because it can be, right? I work in a lot of shop. I design a lot of shopping bags, and you might have like a FSC certified paper shopping bag, but the handle's plastic and it's glued in with like a hot melt glue, yeah. making it, you know, not recyclable until you remove the handle. So there's components.
Well, then you have a contaminated, all of a sudden you get a contaminated stream.
Yeah.
And that's what's beautiful about these machines, is that that's where everything gets separated. And then the contamination partially determines the profitability.
So with that carton and the cap, so as a consumer, should I be removing that cap when I put it in the bin, or put the cap on?
No, you should not remove the cap. You can do it separate. You can do it together.
Mm-hmm.
We throw it. We at our place. We actually, if this was empty, if you put your finger here, you can collapse this and make it even smaller, so it takes up less room.
Sure.
And then, so what I do is I do that, and then I close it up. And if I finish this by the end of the
day, you can show us. Go. So you're not, so having that plastic spout in the pack doesn't make it not recyclable.
Right.
Okay. And that's one of those pieces where people get confused, right? Where they see the two physical.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, one is obviously plastic, one is paper.
So. What, it ends up going through like a wood chipper. You know, when you see the logs go through a wood chipper, this will end up going through a chipper, and then it'll get broken up into all these little strips. And then they use weight and water to have things float to the top, and then they skim off the top, and then they make the emulsifier out of it. So yeah, no, you can, this is good to go just as is.
Wow. Okay. Awesome.
And then the other thing that people have to remember too, which drives me nuts and always has, is that even when you look at cans and you look at bottles, they've been around forever. They have sophisticated and easy recycling systems, but they're still only getting recycled at a 60 to 70. The bottles are like a 10% rate now. But cans are better at least, but they're like 50 to 60%. You still got half that stuff not even getting recycled. So I think of it as a three-pronged event when you talk about what we're trying to do for our planet. There is the front end where, you're growing trees as opposed to extracting oil. The second prong is the actual creation of the product. So the carbon footprint of smelting, of blow molding, of extracting these things is tremendously, and for cans, it's twice as worse to create the product. That's why we have aluminum in here, but it's not formed and molded and all the power and waste that does that. So that's the second prong. And then the third prong is the recycling. And so we need to be cognizant of all three, and I think we're comparable on the recycling side, but my God, we win hands down on the creation side. And that's something that I think comes back to, if you want to put it in a business context, that comes back to educating and driving awareness, because I would guarantee you 99% of Americans don't think about the extraction, don't think about the actual blow molding and the amount of pollution created doing that. There's been so much conversations about recycling, which is important, but we can't lose sight of the other two front end issues here.
The aluminum that's in those, that's new, you know, that's really kind of news to me, is the fact that there's aluminum in there. Is that a complete layer inside, or is that something that's just mixed into the pulp that makes that product?
No, it's a complete layer. And it's literally, it's like 1/10 the thickness of tin foil. So I'm doing this because if you ever seen Mylar, you know those Mylar balloons that you get for your kids supermarket? It's as thin as that. So it's super thin and it's one big piece and it's required by the FDA. It's in there too as a flavor barrier so that like the fish smell and everything. But then also keeps it sealed to make sure that nothing comes out.
The fish smell. Where are you getting fish smell from?
Well, if you have a tuna sandwich,
where are you getting the water from?
All right, I like tuna salad, so we got tuna salad.
but if I tear that box, I'm not gonna see that foil in there, that aluminum, would I?
Yeah, if you look at the top, it's all bonded together. It's not laminated, but it's bonded together. So it's a one piece of aluminum, and you can actually see it peeking through on the top.
Okay.
And I'm not recommending you do this, but I've been told people have put this in when they're camping. They put this in the fire. And the paper will burn off the top, and the aluminum will still stay standing. And then it's thinner than a balloon, and it's one giant piece that again comes flat, and then when you expand it, it basically helps hold the water in.
Got it. No, that's awesome.
And it's why we say we're 92% renewable. I mean, we're not, we're extraordinarily open about the fact that we're better and we're not the best. We wish that we could be 100% renewable. And actually the best is refillable. And one of the things, another interesting thing, I think from a packaging perspective is our next run, we've been around for 10 years. Our next run, we're going to talk about that we're refillable all over on the package because this package is refillable.
Yeah.
And I think about, I say that to people, and you're in the industry, and you go, okay, that makes sense. 9 out of 10 people I say that to go, gosh, I never thought about that. But I'm like, yeah, it's one of these things you don't even think about. But when you go to the airport and you forgot your Swell bottle or your Yeti or, you know, I consider this like a disposable refillable. When I go on trips, I bring one of these, I drink it for a week, and then I get rid of it, recycle it when I'm done. And that way I'm always trying to help the planet and not buying these plastic bottles everywhere I go.
You know, a lot of these brands are, you know, looking to close loop systems, or at least closing that loop. And I'm thinking of like, you know, Pepsi's come out with like a new office machine of like a soda stream type of machine.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? Where people can, you know, put bubbles in their water and do all these different things. So people use less cans and buy less products. Obviously with coronavirus, that has taken a big turn because now people are looking to share any type of,
right, you
know, food product.
They want safe water. Yeah.
Yeah. So
believe me, we've had long conversations about we're refillable, but do we want to say we're refillable? Because now people are scared of refillable.
Yeah. It's definitely a crazy time. Yeah. What's the future of boxed water? You know, is it, you know, focusing more on the pack and the materials and the product, or is this brand able to expand beyond this box?
I think it's definitely able to expand beyond the box. I mean, the box is just a manifestation of the fact that we're trying to help people make sustainable choices and also try to educate people on sustainability and why it's important. I'll be honest with you. I mean, we've been around for 10 years. We've focused strictly on the water and on the packaging. We haven't expanded into flavors. We haven't expanded into other items, primarily because it really has only been the last 2 years that people have where it's clicked that there is a plastic pollution problem. I guarantee you, I can't tell you, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, how many shows or events we did where I would talk to people and say, and they go, well, what's wrong with my plastic bottle? And I'd say, well, you know, it's made from, I mean, honestly, I'd say, well, you know, it's made from oil. And people would stop and just go, God, I never thought about that.
Right.
So we've crossed a major bridge with now it's part of the social conversation. And so now we can start talking about expanding our product line because people are looking for sustainable alternatives. But I like to think that we're beyond just beverage. I mean, we're here to try to help people make sustainable choices in everything they do. And we're also here to try to get people to realize that a small change can make a big difference. I mean, that we've got a community of over 100,000 followers on Instagram and on Facebook. And they're there, A, because the water's great, but more importantly, we've been planting trees, for example, for the last 5 years. And I don't know, so we've hit 1 million trees this year, completely for free, working with the National Forest Foundation, completely with people taking pictures and posting them online for free. You go to a concert and you get a free water from us. You take a picture, you put it on hashtag Better Planet, and at every month we count out how many boxes we see. And it's another reason why it's great that it stands out like that. We plant two trees for every box that we see. So we've gone and this little company from Grand Rapids, Michigan, based on all these consumers who believe in that sort of effort, have now planted 1 million trees in our national forest. And our national forest, by the way, most people don't know, it's the primary filtration system for North America. So most of the water that comes in rainfall comes through a national forest. About 80% of the water comes through a national forest. And so we're trying to help water the planet's filtration system as well. So I would love to be able to make other products and talk about the same thing. Let's work on reforestation with this, but let's work on cleaning beaches with something else and do that same sort of concept where come on along, let's build a community. Let's do this together.
Yeah. So if I, I buy the product, I photograph it, I share it on social media. I hashtag it. What was it?
Hashtag Better Planet.
Okay. I hashtag it Better Planet.
Just tag at Boxed Water, either one.
Right.
Both.
Then at the end of the month, Boxed Water tallies those up and plants two trees per post.
Yes.
So as a consumer, actively engaging in the planting.
Exactly.
But, it's on a certain level.
Yeah. Well, it's the easiest, think about it though. It's the easiest two trees you'll ever plant.
Yeah.
And what I love about it, if you go on, you can, I think that's why we have such an active social feed. Creatives, artists, photographers have done incredible things with our boxes and put them in incredible different creative ways. And then the other thing that's cool is that families have gotten together and it's a way to talk to your children about hydration, pure water, which is healthy for you. But then let's go the next level and talk about planting trees and why reforestation and the environment is possible. So sure. From an education and from a family side of things, it's also been a great platform in order to help the community. And it's cool because it's really creating, it's empowering the community to make a change through just one small act.
Right. And you're planting these trees in an actual national forest. But I think it's important just to state that it is a national forest versus there's a lot of carbon emissions offset programs out there where you can plant trees.
Yeah.
And these aren't done necessarily in national forests. They're done on open acreage and, you know, they plant X amount of trees to offset whatever the emissions are for that year. And then they cut those down at the end of the year so they can plant more. It's not really helping anybody at the end of the day.
It's smoking mirrors.
Yes. Yes.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Because actually we don't get it as much. Early on, consumers used to contact us and say, well, you're just planting trees so you can make more boxes. And that's totally not the case. Right. We work with the National Forest Foundation and we plant trees. We've planted in, I think, over 50 or 60 different national forests. The national forest is different than the national parks. So you think about Yellowstone and whatnot. National parks are made for people to go to. The national forests have 190 million acres that's being overseen by the Department of Agriculture. And those are natural places that they keep they keep natural in order to keep the balance of our ecosystem alive. So national parks are within the national forests, but the national parks are where people can go, and then the national forests all around it is the real outdoors. Right.
It's where you're going to get mauled by something.
Unfortunately.
The Boxwater also says that it uses FSC paper.
Yeah.
Right. So how much FSC paper is in it? And do you mind explaining a little bit about what FSC is and how that makes it more sustainable?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call out. So it's 100% FSC paper. FSC is an organization that they monitor and they keep track of the tree farms, because there are tree farms out there. And what the tree farms do is that they are in the business of just growing quick wood, but they make sure that it's done in a sustainable way. They make sure that it's done in a proper way, using all the right environmental elements, so that they're not poisoning and they're not cutting down natural forests. So you can pick specific types of trees that grow quickly, and they are the ones that are growing trees and then felling trees and then at the same time growing trees around them. And FSC is a group that's primarily out of Europe and most of the Scandinavian countries, and they're 100 years ahead of us as far as being environmental and making sure that we are living up to the standards of not depleting the resources. One interesting thing, just to go back to the other trees that we're planting in the national forests. National forests are fascinating. I encourage everyone to go to the National Forest Foundation website or go to our website. You can see where they're planted. But what we do with this organization, it's not just throwing out seeds. This organization monitors 190 million acres of forests across our country. They monitor where the forest fires are, where they have been, pestilence, and then they keep track of the soil, and they find the areas that are most ready to take new plantings. Then they study the types of trees that are in that area. They make sure that they have the right trees that will live within that area and flourish. They then plant those trees and grow them to saplings. They then go to those places, they plant those trees. And then once the trees are planted, they watch them for a year to make sure that they take. So I say that at the end, so you can see the difference between a tree farm where they're being grown, but they're being grown responsibly and then cut down. And then these guys who go off and actually make sure that the trees grow and take, one tree can remove, I think it's 500 tons of CO2. So again, a million trees makes me really excited about the CO2 that's being removed from the planet. And if anybody wants to see it, you can go to our website. I'm the marketing guy. So go to our website, because we've got some really cool videos of people planting trees. It's big, burly guys. It's hard work.
Well, Rob, I appreciate you coming on, talking about your history, talking about the box, the water. I didn't ask you where that water comes from. Where does that water come from?
We have two filling stations. One is Lake Michigan, which is one of the purest lakes in America. Mm-hmm. Despite what people think, it's awesome. And then the other one is out of Utah. The Wasatch National Forest, actually, where we've planted trees. There's an aquifer there that we pull from. And then we've got a 8 times reverse osmosis process that's proprietary. And we do UV light filtration in order to make sure that it's free of any impurities. And we test our water 5 times a day to make sure that it doesn't have any impurities in it. And we've won awards with our water as far as its taste. So I encourage everyone, I mean, sustainability is great, but you have to have a great product in order to survive as a company. And we've got some wonderful water, and I would encourage everybody to take a drink.
Rob, thank you so much for being on. If anybody wants to reach out to you to find out more about Boxwater or just ask you a question about marketing, what's the best place that they can reach you?
I would say we're still a super small company. Go to hello@boxwater.com.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's the email address. And frankly, if you go to our website, you'll go to the bottom and there's hello@boxwater.
Excellent.
Again, another design aspect of the box. I mean, people love the fact that we are a friendly company and it starts with a hello.
That's awesome. Well, Rob, hello, and thank you for being on. I really appreciate you coming on. Definitely learned a lot, and hopefully we can make a change and, you know, make those recyclable 100% across the country.
Yeah. No, thank you for showing an interest, and thank everybody for supporting sustainability. The planet needs it.
Please rate, review, and subscribe to Package Design Unboxed. Thanks again to Rob for being on, and thanks to you for listening. Talk soon.